My name is Shinshu Roberts. I trained at San Francisco Zen Center. I was a resident there for 17 years. I have Dharma transmission from Sojin Mel Weitzman, who's the abbot at the Berkeley Zen Center. I live with my partner in Capitola, and we have a Zen Center on 41st Avenue called Ocean Gate Zen Center. I think that's my story.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. I came here, I think, around 2005 and did a shishin. So I was here for a week, and I've been a couple of times lately and given lectures, so it's really my pleasure to be here. Today I want to talk about a quote from Billie Jean King, which I heard on a front line. I don't know if any of you saw that. It was several months ago. There was on Channel 9, there was a program about Billie Jean King. So here's what Ms. King had to say. Great champions win by staying on their side of the net, getting their own act together, and accepting responsibility. Every decision in life has a consequence, just like every ball I hit has a consequence. And then she's talking about playing, she's actually talking about playing against Bobby Riggs. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. That was like the battle of the sexes, right? Billie Jean King against Bobby Riggs. Mm-hmm. They brought her out on a dais on a, you know, I think it's called, I always have a problem with this word, palanquin. They brought her out on that, and she was like waving to the crowd. It was this whole big production. Okay, so I'll start over again. Great champions win by staying on their side of the net, getting their own act together. And accepting responsibility. Every decision in life has its consequence. Just like every ball I hit has a consequence. So she says, I was totally motivated. All I had to do was get the ball over the net. You have to finish. It's so hard to finish anything in life. So all I had to do, she's talking about the final points, all I had to do was get the ball over the net. You have to finish. It's so hard to finish anything in life. So I thought, oh, that's an interesting quote. It really kind of resonated with me. I'm writing a book, and I'm getting to the place where I'm going to send it to the publisher. So it's like I put in big letters, you have to finish, on my computer. The closer I get, the more reluctant I seem to be to want to let it go. So it's like things are going way down to a snail's pace. So I'm thinking, oh, this is really interesting. You know what? This says something about practice. I think she said something very deep about practice. So let me tell you what I think, how I interpret this quote from a practice point of view. So first of all, we're talking about great champions. So great champions of the Dharma. In Tibetan Buddhism, Bodhisattvas and Buddhas, they call them warriors, champions. The Buddha is called a conqueror, right? So this is kind of language.
Victorious.
Conqueror of, so this is kind of difficult language for many of us because we don't tend to think of our practice in kind of warrior terms. So let me talk about that a little bit. First, I looked up the word champion in the dictionary to see what the etymology of it is. And champion means a winner, a victor, a supporter, a defender, an advocate, someone who defeats opponents and fights for a cause. Kampen means battle. So that's what the champion means. The root word of champion is battle. Kampa in Old English is a warrior. And it also is referred to the word camp, K-A-M-P, which is the root word for campus, which is a field or a battlefield. I think you did the road chant this morning, right?
Yeah.
So in the road chant, it says, great field of liberation. This great field of liberation is our life. It is the whole universe. It is this place of being, which is this present moment right now. So in a sense, that is our battlefield if we want to think of ourselves as warriors. Now talking it again, let's talk about what I mean by this idea of a battlefield. So champion carries all these connotations of someone who is an advocate, someone who is waging a great fight. Now, a bodhisattva, okay, bodhisattva is a Sanskrit word for basically the person, the path, the way of being that as Mahayana Buddhists we engage in. We say the bodhisattva path. The bodhisattva vow is essentially to keep being reborn until all beings are enlightened. In early Buddhism, we talk about karma, and karma pulls you back into the next lifetime based on your clinging. And usually we talk about that in a negative connotation, like you're pulled back into your life because you have all these unresolved kind of messy threads that need to be taken care of. So that's kind of a way we talk about our Buddhist path and about rebirth. But in the Mahayana, the bodhisattva, their attachment is to seeing that all beings are saved. Their attachment is to wanting everyone to be enlightened. So the bodhisattva's karma is that the bodhisattva keeps getting pulled back into this life because they want to be on that field. They want to be engaged in that battle, if you will. They want to be engaged in that process for themselves and for others. So in this way, champion is very apropos of talking about our path of practice. So the two things that in Buddhism that the bodhisattva warrior is involved in is working with understanding the nature of what it is to be in an interconnected relationship with all beings. What does that mean? We often talk about, we say, that's no self. That means no inherently existing self. If you do not have an inherently existing self, what you have is a self that's deeply interpenetrated, interconnected with all beings. No difference. So when we say no self, we're not saying that you don't have a personality. We're not saying that you don't have a particular being, right? We're not saying no cliff. We're saying no inherently existing cliff. And there's a big difference there. It means that we are in community. It means that we acknowledge the community-ness of us, right? All of us in this room right now, and this could be a yucky thought or not, we're all breathing in each other's air. In that process, we are really interpenetrating. We are really completely integrating each other into ourselves on a cellular level, right? That's happening all the time. So that happens in a broader way. So the bodhisattva path is when we realize this and can enact this, what comes out of that? Compassion. What comes out of that? Wisdom. What comes out of that? Skillful response. So this is that battleground, if you will. This is this place where we're out there in the mud, you know, we're like trying to figure it out. What is this? What is this? How does this work? You know, how is it that I can be interconnected with all beings and still be pissed off, you know, when somebody does something that I don't like? How is it that that happens? How do I work with myself in that way? So in some ways, we have to be warriors, right? We have to really face this. We have to be engaged with this process. So there's this aspect of this bodhisattva vow, this way in which we overcome our selfishness, this way in which we battle with ourselves, if you will, to understand the nature of the self. How is it that we are in this life? And then there's the side of the champion that's the defender, right? That compassion side, the wisdom side, that fierce wisdom of Manjushri's sword, cutting through delusion. That defender and advocate for all beings. That side of it as well. So there's this way that we're working to work with, not repress, not deny, but to work with the parts of ourselves that are in delusion, and this way that we work with all beings, we are defenders of all beings. So there's that two aspects of this word champion. Shantideva, who was an 8th century Buddhist monk, wrote a very famous text called Guide to the Bodhisattva Way. Here's an example of how someone might use this. Shantideva said, even when the wise are suffering, their minds remain very lucid and undefiled. So even when we are suffering, if we have a certain level of wisdom, our minds are lucid and undefiled. For when war is being waged against disturbing conceptions, much harm is caused at the time of battle. He's saying here, when we are at our most upset, if we can stay lucid, if we can stay engaged, if we can remember our practice, remember the Dharma, that's when we're most able to affect transformation. Transformation doesn't happen when things are easy, for the most part. That's not where we learn stuff, is it? We learn by making mistakes. We learn by getting angry. We learn by being jealous. We learn by being selfish. We learn in this way and we say, oh, gosh, that's not really how I want to act. That's not really my understanding of what it is to be a compassionate, engaged person in this world. And so we say, well, I want to change. I want some transformation to happen. This is this battle that he's talking about. This is this way that when he says disturbing, that he says much harm is caused. Because in this model, which is often used in Tibetan Buddhism, in this model, as practitioners, we're out there fighting the good fight to affect transformation in ourselves for the most part. This is not so much about going out and proselytizing. This is about looking at ourselves and saying, what is it? What needs to happen here? In a kind way. I'm not talking about brutalizing ourselves. Because whenever we brutalize ourselves, we inevitably say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't want this. Because who wants that? So this way in which we kindly, with compassion and generosity, fight the battle, if you will, for awakening. So, just as a little sidelight, it's always helpful to think, when you're talking to yourself about something that you're upset with yourself about, how would I talk to a friend? How would I talk to my best friend about this? Because often our self-talk can be really harsh. Say, oh, you're stupid, you did this, you did that, you know, you made a mistake. So what would you say to your best friend who did something? You wouldn't say to your best friend, oh, you know, you're stupid. You'd say, oh, you're really a good person, you know. You're a great person. It's like, yeah, maybe that wasn't too helpful. Yeah, could use a little work there, but you know, you'll get it next time. Suzuki Roshi said, you're perfect just as you are, and a little work needs to be done. Right? So we always have a little work to do. And that's that field there. That's part of that field. We like to think of the field of enlightenment, if you will, as some kind of our idea of some kind of perfect place. And our idea of a perfect place is that nothing bad ever happens, no conflict, I always do the right thing, stuff like that. But particularly in Soto Zen, this is our everyday life. This includes samsara. This includes nirvana. Dogen says, Dogen, who's the founder of Soto Zen in the 13th century in Japan, Dogen says, go beyond delusion and enlightenment. Go beyond your ideas of this or that and just completely engage the moment. Completely be with what's arising in this moment. How can we do that? So this is this way that we talked about the Bodhisattva path. This is a way of talking about the Bodhisattva path from this position of being a champion or being a warrior. So the next part of the quote is, she says, stay on, she says, great champions win by staying on their side of the net, getting their own act together and accepting responsibility. So I really love this. Staying on their side of the net and accepting responsibility. usually we want to like jump on the other side of the net. We want to say, I missed that volley because you made a bad volley. You know, it's like we kind of want to blame. We want to say, oh, that was because of something else. I didn't have anything to do with that. So in order to truly investigate the nature of how we function in the world, the nature of what it is to be in this world, what it is to be in an interconnected world, we have to look at ourselves. Buddhist practice is about a kind of clear-eyed, compassionate, meeting ourselves where we are. This is staying on our side of the net. So we don't have to beat ourselves up, but we do have to be present for what's going on. I had a fight with my partner last night. And so, you know, when we have a fight with somebody, we might say, oh, it's all their fault. You know, this happened, it's all their fault. But actually, you know, it was my fault. Partly my fault, maybe 95% my fault. You know, I was very unskillful. And I wasn't self-aware enough at that moment to be able to catch myself and say, uh-oh, you're going down that path, you know. I was like driving my car with a steering, I was like, so I walk in the door and, and I didn't know I was in that place. So that we have to wake up, you know. We have to be self-aware of what we're doing. And sometimes we're going to like, you know, we always think, oh, you know, I'm not a Buddha. I never, you know. But actually there are many, many, many things that you do that's a Buddha, that's a Buddhist response. And then there are things like I did yesterday that are not Buddhist response. Or maybe they are Buddhist response, just not a very awake Buddha. And so to Zen we say, Dogen says, we are all Buddha. We're all Buddha. So what he means by that is that, you know, what is a Buddha? A Buddha is a person who, or a being, I would say, that completely is able to respond appropriately to what's happening. I bet you guys do that a lot. We don't even think about it. He says, Buddhas who are Buddhas go on actualizing Buddhas who don't even know that they are Buddhas. Look at that. Buddhas who do not know that they are Buddhas go on actualizing Buddhas who do not know that they are Buddhas. Anyway, the point here is that you don't even know that you're a Buddha because we tend to focus on the parts of ourselves where we make mistakes. And that's appropriate. We should take responsibility, but we need to balance that with acknowledging that we do a lot of things that are really spot on a lot. Buddha's not some kind of exalted place that none of us can attain. Buddha is just expressing our true nature, which is called Buddha nature. And Buddha nature is everything. Buddha nature is all beings. Buddha nature is, we don't have to go out and look for it. We don't have to find it. We don't have to cultivate it. We already are it because we are not separate from all being. We are all being. Just like this podium is all being, the paper is all being, the birds are all being. All of us are engaged in this total and complete practice together, making a world. So in that way, we are Buddha. Do we always express that? No. But in that way, we are Buddha. So like Suzuki Roshi said, there's a little work that needs to be done. So the way that we do that work is that we have to look at what we're doing and take responsibility for it. We have to, as Billie Jean King says, we have to stay on our side of the net. So I think part of what she's saying too is that we can't, you know, the ball comes, here comes the ball, here comes life. Ball's coming, what am I going to do now? You know, and so we practice, she practices, we practice, we try to slow the moment down maybe, try to pay attention. Like yesterday, if I had been more aware, self-aware of what was going on, I could have slowed that down and said, oh, you know. So there's this way in which the ball's coming, But we have to meet the ball on our side of the net. We can't meet the ball over on the other side of the net. And this, I think, is where we get these preconceived ideas about what it is that we're doing. And we're not actually engaged in this moment right now. So this way that we don't actually meet the moment as it is, we meet it as we think it should be. We meet it as some idea we have in our minds about what that is. So we think, oh, what is a Buddha? Well, a Buddha is perfect, and I'm not perfect, therefore I can't be a Buddha. But when we directly meet the moment, we are Buddha and we don't even have to think about it. If you're driving down the street and somebody pulls into traffic and you just let them in, don't even think about it. You just let them in. That's the response of Buddha. That's the Buddha's response. When we act in a generous way, open the door for somebody, don't think about it, just open the door, that's a Buddha's response. Where else would it be? Where else do Buddhas respond? They respond on their side of the net. What is our side of the net? Our side of the net is our life. It's not somebody else's life. It's this life, right here, right now. It's this moment, you sitting here right now. It's the moment in the future when you get in your car and leave if you don't live here. It's this moment and this moment and this moment and this moment, just meeting each moment on our side of the net. If we do that, everything else will take care of itself. But in order to do that, we have to investigate our lives. We have to investigate the nature of our life. That's one of the great things about sitting zazen, meditating. Meditating is like, stay, right? Oh, I'm in the room now. I can't leave. I've made this commitment. Of course you could get up and leave, but we don't. We stay. Go stay. 40 minutes. Oh, stay. You know, I'm thinking about all the stuff. Come back to the present moment. Come back to the present moment. You don't need to say, I'm a terrible person. I can't, you know, like sit without thinking about stuff. And you don't need to say to yourself, a perfect practitioner would be this or that and the other thing. It's just, come back. Come back. Come back. So we just come back to our side of the net. Just come back and meet the ball. Dogen said in Genjo Koan, he said, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. This is a very famous quote. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. To be actualized by all things is to cast off one's body and mind and the bodies and minds of others as well. All traces of enlightenment disappear, and the traceless enlightenment continues on without end. So the first thing he says is to study the Buddha way is to study the self. So if we talk about a self that is not inherently existing, if we talk about a self that's completely unpenetrated with all life, that's what we're studying, that's what we're looking at. But the only way we're going to find that self is to look at ourselves as we are right now. Not some idea we would like to be, not some any ideas, just my life right now, just as it is right now. So the study of the self doesn't have to be some kind of woo-woo activity. It's just your life as it is right now. But then he says, to study the self is to forget the self. This doesn't mean that your job is to find some place where you don't exist. It means that we integrate ourselves in a selfless way, in a way that's not selfish, in a way that's inclusive of the totality of the situation. We integrate ourselves. If you're driving your car, just imagine if you're driving your car and you kind of like pull way back and you could look down on all of, I live in Santa Cruz, okay, so all of Santa Cruz County, you could see everybody driving their car simultaneously. What you would see was this great interactive event. You would see people stopping at stoplights. You'd see people pulling into driveways, you'd see all sorts of stuff, but it would be like this big whole, this big integrated event. Because for the most part, most of us are following the rules, right? And what are the rules about? The rules are is acknowledging that there are thousands of cars on the road, and we all have to engage in these activities which acknowledge that we're an interconnected whole. You couldn't drive across the city. You could drive across Santa Cruz if people weren't acknowledging that. We don't call it that. We call it, you know, following the rules of the road. We call it stopping at lights. Now, luckily, most of us do that, because for the few people who don't do that, everybody else waits. You know, it's like you're at the stop light and somebody pulls through the red light. Maybe four people pull through the red light. I see this a lot in San Francisco. It's like the light goes red and three or four people go through it. Thank goodness everybody else waits. This is an acknowledgement. You may not think of it this way, but this is a way of acknowledging that we are in this interconnected relationship with each other. It's helpful to us to accommodate each other. Part of that is altruistic. Part of it is just, I don't want to have an accident. I want to get home. So there's this way in which we don't even think about our everyday activities this way, but they are this vast, interpenetrating whole. If you didn't know that there were people in those cars and you were just looking down on all these cars driving around, what would you think if you were like somebody dropped in from another planet? You might think that there was this vast coordinating event going on, like kind of like maybe we were ants or something, or bees. Maybe we were insects all kind of in a hive mind. Maybe we were all interconnected. But we're in our cars and we think, I'm just me. I'm individual. I'm by myself. I'm driving my car. But actually, we're not. We're engaged in this activity as Buddhas. Even though we do not know that we are Buddhas, we go on actualizing Buddhas. Every time you do something compassionate in your car, you have just actualized a Buddha. You have just created that kind of sense of generosity that will carry itself forward. You like that phrase, right? Carry it forward. So this way that it gets carried forward. Even though that person doesn't acknowledge you, it's there. It's in the person's psyche. It's in their body. It's in your body, right? It's in your psyche. Every time you do that, every time you do that, we practice because that part of us, which is actually all of us, but that Buddha nature in us, it practices because that's the nature of its nature of a Buddha is to practice. We don't practice to get to become Buddhas. We practice because we already are Buddhas. We practice because it is our Buddha nature that wants to practice. And the more we engage in that practice, it's like the more it happens, and the more it happens, and the more it happens. The more it expands, the more we find joy in that, the more we want to continue in that. So, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. To forget the self is to have the world come forward and meet you. And that we see that the world is meeting us. This often happens when we go outside. Like, it's a great thing about being at Jokoji, right? Is you go outside and we're kind of open in a certain way. Like when you go out someplace like this and it's at night and you look up at the stars and you say, wow, I am so insignificant. You know, it's like you're just, completely forget the self. You look up and you're like, wow, you know, speechless, the universe, completely connected in this way. Myriad things are coming forward to meet you. The question is, that feels really great, but can we do that at the supermarket, right? Can we do that? Can we do that? This is my favorite example. You're standing in the express line counting the number of items the person in front of you has. Because you're sure that it's more than 12 or whatever the sign says. Can we do that? Can we meet the myriad things of our lives as they are, as we are in this moment? Can we be present for things just as they are in this moment? Not the way we'd like them to be, not the way we want them to change. Just be present for that. Just accept that. By the way, this doesn't mean that you don't change things when you have an opportunity to change things. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is that You actually meet the moment as it is. This is the way that one of the ways that we alleviate suffering for ourselves and others. We meet people where they are, not where we want them to be. If we have a difficult coworker, try to meet that person where they are, as opposed to how you would like them to be. Because if they're a difficult person for you, the way you would like them to be is the way that would make you comfortable, right? That's what we like things that make us feel comfortable. And we don't want to take responsibility. We want to blame the other for making us feel uncomfortable. So how can we actually meet being uncomfortable and have that be okay? Meet the difficult situation and have that be okay? How can we meet somebody who's difficult and say, how is this person like me? How can I say I have actually am interconnected with this person? Right in this moment of I wish you'd go away, how can I be in an interpenetrating relationship with them? This is a koan. This is a question that we want to have come into our minds when we're in a difficult situation. Because when we do that, we start to take responsibility. We start to meet myriad things as they come forward to meet us. When we do that, all these resistances start to drop away. And this is casting off body and mind. All these ways in which we want to go, oh, separate, 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 start to drop away. And when they start to drop away, transformation begins to happen. Again, this is not about becoming a Pollyanna. It's not about getting pushed around. It's not about being in unwholesome situations. But it's about this just willingness to meet the situation, just willingness to be present for that situation as it is. Willing to meet yourself with all of your mistakes and myself, meet myself last night, right, with my mistakes about not being skillful. A willingness to stand here and say, yes, I made this mistake. Now what? Now what do I do? What is the appropriate thing? What is skillful action? What can I do in this moment? And then go to the next thing. Meet that thing. Take responsibility for it. So that's, you know, meeting the ball on your side of the net. Sometimes when it happens, we have to think about it. Sometimes we have to go, what do I do? What do I do? And then sometimes it just happens. Sometimes it's like that. It just happens. Driving your car, somebody pulls in front of you, no problem. It just happens. That's Buddha's response. Dogen talks about, in Uji, he says, the sharp, vital, quick. See if I... Kapatsupachi. The sharp, vital, quick of Kapatsupachi. Of dharmas dwelling in their dharma positions. Kapatsupachi is a fish leaping out of the water and coming down. So that's myriad things coming forward. Just this. That's that vital, quick moment in our lives. Going back to the image of the champion, there you are, meeting your life. There you are, the warrior, meeting your life. Warriors are brave. It takes courage to do practice. Practice takes courage. We should all give ourselves credit for being courageous. You know, we're not hiding. We're actually meeting our lives. That takes a lot of courage. So that's that image of the warrior, this courageous warrior, ready to meet what is there. Not ready to punch out, not ready to knock down, not ready to run over, ready to completely meet. You know, in Star Wars, the Jedi warriors, right, the thing about them is that they always move with, are completely in accord with their opponent. So this way that we are in accord with our lives, we're in accord with the myriad things that are rising and needing us. And that's hard. That's hard. That takes courage. It takes practice. It takes perseverance. It takes effort. So that's why we have all these admonitions and things that we do in practice. It's because they help build those muscles so that we can meet each situation and we're like the fish that flies out of the water. Just responds. Next, flies up. Just life coming and going. just being with each thing. So then she says, all I have to do is get the ball over. All I have to do is get the ball over. It's nothing special. We like to make Zen practice special. We like to make Buddhist practice special. Oh, I have to go to the monastery. I have to go have some kind of like deep enlightenment experience. All you have to do is meet your life. When you come to the Zendo, you're meeting your life. It may feel different because we live in the United States, but if you were down at the local, I don't know, YMCA hall or something, sitting in folding chairs, it wouldn't be as sexy, but it's the same thing. You're meeting your life right in this moment. So Dogen said, those who regard worldly affairs as a hindrance to the Buddha Dharma only think that here is not Buddha Dharma in the secular world and do not understand that there is no secular world in Buddha Dharma. So he says, if you think of your life, if you think of your job, if you think of all the activities you're engaged in as a hindrance to your practice, then you're not really meeting your life. You're thinking, oh, I can only practice in this place, over here. I can't practice over here. Dogen says, if the time arrives, is right now. So we say, oh, I'll practice when the time arrives. I'll make that apology when it's the right time, right? I'll look at what I did when it's the right time, when it feels comfortable for me. But he's saying, meet your life as it is right now, not some idea of if that time comes, because if the time comes, is right now. There isn't any place in the future for you to do this. It's right now. It's in your life right now, in this moment, in this moment, in this moment. It's not, there's no difference between secular life and religious life. They're all the same. It's the same activity. Who comes to the Zendo? Who are you? Are you any different than you were when you were at home this morning eating breakfast? Are you like a different person? I would suggest to you, well, maybe yes or no. Right? Both. That's very Zen, don't you think? Both. Or maybe beyond both. Because when you're eating your breakfast, chances are you were just eating your breakfast. Completely Buddha eating breakfast. Now you're here, you're completely Buddha listening to this lecture. Because when you're not thinking about yourself, you're just here. You're just being. You're just allowing myriad things to come forward. That's going beyond the this or that. That's going beyond the secular and the religious. That's just meeting your life just where it is. There's a famous quote that Dogen uses to talk also about. He says, he's talking about mystical powers, right? But there's a little trick to this, which is mystical powers are actually everyday activities. He says, the mystical power and wondrous function, carrying water and lugging firewood. You've heard that phrase, haven't you? Carrying water. Usually it's
carrying water.
Carrying water and lugging firewood. Now, don't we all know that Zen masters carry water and lug firewood differently than anybody else does? They not only, they drink tea, too, in this really amazing way. Like they're up in the mountains and they're in little grass huts. They're kind of wizened little Chinese guys, you know. They've got on these robes and they're poor and they're tea. They have special teacups and all this stuff, you know. It's like, but you know, the only reason they talk about Zen masters drinking tea is because that's what people did in China. Now, we'd be drinking coffee, right? Unless, of course, you're in a Zen monastery, then you'd probably be drinking green tea. But for the rest of us, we're all at home having coffee that we've made in our drip coffee maker with our Melitta or whatever, you know, or maybe we've got an espresso machine or whatever it might be, right? So it's like, that's it, you know? That's it. Eating rice, drinking tea. We don't usually chop firewood. But we do other things. We wash dishes.
You do here.
You do here. I know. But I'm talking about those of us who live out there in the world with dishwashers and things like that, you know. But that activity of loading the dishwasher is just as much your life, is just as much an expression of your realization. Driving your car is just as much an expression of your realization as how well you can gassho, right, as doing this. Just as much. So we shouldn't give any of those things short shift, because that's, for most of us, that's where the rubber meets the road most of the time in our lives. We come here to, you can correct me if you don't agree with me, but I think we come here because we need some space. We need a kind of entryway. We need a kind of clarity. We need a kind of way in which we just sit down. Do we talk about zazen? Sit down. Just be with your life in this very simple way. It's complicated. Life is complicated. Relationships are complicated. Driving your car is complicated. Sometimes it's hard to remember all this stuff. Sometimes it's hard to do this. We just get caught. You know, we're just caught. We have these big sleeves, right? An example would be, you go through the door and your sleeve gets caught on a doorknob and you go, ah, you know, like this. You just get caught by your life. And because it's going by so fast, it's like you don't wake up. You don't, like, some little voice doesn't say to you, wake up, stop, 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 right? You just, like, do. So coming here helps you slow down. It helps you stop. It helps you have some space. It's kind of like saying, when you're angry, you count to 10 before you say anything. Is it lunchtime? I can stop.
No, keep going.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So I say one more thing about this that I think is really important. It's really important to make a vow to yourself about what it is that your practice is. We say, we have a bodhisattva vow, beings are numberless, I vow to save them, delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them, dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them, Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. That vow is a wonderful vow, but it's very global, right? Find a vow for yourself. What is it that you need to work on? You know? Are you somebody who gets jealous? For me, it's anger. I get angry. One time my teacher said, what do you want? What do you want? I said, you know, what I really want is to be able to communicate. I really want to be able to communicate in a compassionate way. So for me, that was a very specific admonition about something, some way that I wanted to work on. So find something that, as Suzuki Roshi says, is your inmost vow. What's the most important thing to you? What is it? So that when you find yourself falling down, you can say, no, my vow is that I really want to learn compassion. My vow is I really want to work with my anger. I really want to be able to connect. And then that vow will help you to do that hard work. It will help you to meet the ball on your side of the net. Okay, thank you very much.